The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 29th of April, 2025, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. We've got lots to talk about this morning. Let's call it an open line. The numbers to call 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. 242-300-5720 for Family Island listeners. Toll free, of course, 242-300-5720 for all of our Family Island listeners. And 422-GR96, that's 422-4796. That is the text line powered, as always, by BTC. There are fires in Abaco. Fires again in Abaco. Is this climate change? Is this recklessness and negligence? Or is this malfeasance? Do we have an arsonist afoot? I am disheartened. I don't see any stories in the paper today. Maybe I didn't scour the paper. When by the time I checked the online version, I did not see any stories yesterday about the fires in Abaco. This is a big deal. This should hit national coverage, but I wait for clarity from the folks in Abaco about what's going on. Lots in the papers today. I'm going to get to the headlines in a moment. I want to remind you of the Loyalist Charles Farquharson Will Competition. The competition is organized in Bethel, great-great-great-great-grandson of the Loyalist Charles Farquharson. The competition is open to senior and junior high school students. Three winners will be selected, one from San Salvador, one from Grand Bahama or New Providence, and one from the rest of the Family Islands. To win the prize, you must correctly identify the government recording record for Charles Farquharson's will. That's the government recording record for Charles Farquharson's will and the date of Charles Farquharson's death. Those two correct answers will secure you as a winner. The first person to submit the correct answer in each category will be the winner. I have to say good morning. Mr. Bethel has indicated to me that the prize money has increased by $250. And we want to say thank you to Mr. Smokey Fernanda of Fernanda's Trucking and Heavy Equipment off Canberra Road for this contribution of $250. So right now the prize pot stands at $450 plus a number of vouchers and smaller gift certificates, including from Mr. Kevin Culmer, a friend of the Nassau Guardian and proprietor of Tropical Gyros. We want to say thank you to everyone. Again, to win the competition, you must provide the government recording record for Charles Farquharson's will and the date of Charles Farquharson's death. You're going to call the show, indicate that you're here to answer the questions. You'll be transferred to the producer. And if you're calling on behalf of your child, your student, have their name, their grade, contact information, and school and the correct answers. and you will be contacted by the organizers to indicate whether you have submitted a correct answer or not. Again, that's the Loyalist Charles Farquharson Will Competition, and we say good morning and thank you to Mr. Smokey Fernanda for joining this wonderful initiative. All right, there's lots to talk about this morning. I had prepared...
Before you go there,
yeah, good
Aaron,
morning
forgive
to
me.
You.
And good morning to you. I normally wouldn't interrupt, especially with that introduction, but just recently I was doing some research. I'm a part of this group and I was trying to get the right name. They do genealogy in general,
okay.
Mostly Anglo-Bohemians, but they, especially for the Miley, the Malone Foundation in Abaco, the name just escaped me.
All right.
And the heritage and I was going to look at my phone. That's why I was trying to speed up.
Yeah.
They mentioned the Farquharson name and the loyalists who came down. It was given great detail about it. And I thought about looking for it, right? Because I was doing research on something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to mention that the group does exist. Hopefully, before the end of the show, I'll interrupt you and say, okay, this is the name of the group.
Yeah, yeah.
That whoever's listening and who's looking for Bohemian surnames, history of loyalists in general,
mm-hmm.
And narratives, because it's a whole book that they have. I'll mention it, but just give me a few.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll just go along with the show. I'll look to see if my email has it still.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Awesome. Again, the Loyalist Charles Farquharson Will Competition. So I had a number of stories prepared from yesterday's print. SpaceX's post-landing report received by DEPP. Taxi drivers, quote, under siege, close quotes, asserts union president. That's a continuation, really, of the conversation we started yesterday on ride shares. I'm really interested in that. And then this article, Davis says more must be done to protect children. In this instance, the data referenced is Mrs. Anne Marie Davis, spouse of the Prime Minister, who holds the office of the spouse of the Prime Minister. So three interesting stories, one environment-centered, one child protection-centered, as we close out Child Protection Month. Of course, this month, April, also hosts Earth Day, and so that's our environment story. And then taxi drivers under siege is a big story especially when we're looking at the ride share aspect. Then in today's papers, a continuation from the story you picked up on, Mr. Newry, nurses protest at foreign bias, in quotes, quote, foreign bias, close quotes, and warrants issued for three police after court no-show. Another article I'm interested in is a follow-up on a conversation you had last week, Mr. Newry. Hanschel installed as new president of Bahamas College of Bishops, right? That was a very interesting story. And it appears as if, Mr. Newry, Prime Minister Davis, leader of the opposition, Pintard, and leader of the COI, Lincoln Bain, it appears as if all three individuals spoke at that event. Very interesting.
Bishop Hanschel is able to bring people together. Like, the entire Bahamas knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of crossing political lines, if there's anyone who could do that, it'll be definitely him.
And maintain sort of his integrity,
yes,
as a religious leader and stakeholder.
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely. Maybe we talk about that in a minute. Some things that haven't hit the news, measles vaccinations. Mm. That's in today's Guardian. And I think we're going to touch on that story as soon as we get started. Elections in Trinidad and Tobago.
Mm.
Rowley's party is out. I could be honest with you, if it ain't named doubles, I don't really pay that much attention to it. I mean, the names of the political parties, right? But I know Rowley's party is out. I would say the predominantly African mm-hmm. party is out. Prasad is in.
Back in.
Yeah, back in.
Mind you, Rowley is very popular.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? To me, he was one of those populist type government in terms of how he pursued his governance.
Yeah.
And I think that came to bite him. Everyone noticed that he always creating a narrative based on popularity.
Mm.
We have another prime minister in the Caribbean who does that. It should be interesting, especially if she has a majority of the seats, all of the seats in her in her country, in fact.
You trying to raggy up Motley for being on stage with... How many women prime ministers do we have in the Caribbean?
You're trying
to raggy up Motley for being on stage with the gals, them sugar?
Yeah, again, the populist type governance, they tend to carry on. Also, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, they tend not to be analytical. Mind you, they're brilliant. But in terms of trying to get a popular stance, it seems as if they always chasing that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are getting tired of it.
St. Vincent is, for me, a particular example. Uncle Ralph?
Mm-hmm.
The boy wild.
He's a good uncle. But again, you get overwhelmed.
Yeah, I don't know if he's a good prime minister. He's a good uncle.
He's a good uncle.
Yeah. Some people may say he's a great prime minister, but not necessarily a good uncle. People switch it around, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he's a great leader, not necessarily very good with the people. And then somebody, just before we get started, they say good morning to the gospel singer and poet B, who we just met downstairs. I'm hoping to have the young lady
downstairs,
musician and poet. She is a gospel singer.
I see you get an announcement from downstairs with your name on it.
Oh, there you go.
So hopefully that's someone for your Charles Farquharson thing.
Yeah, the Charles Farquharson Wheel Competition. Yeah. Hopefully, I don't know, maybe it's a submission of correct answers, or maybe it is another contribution or donation. Mm-hmm. We want to say thank you to everyone who's considered it, who's shared the word, who's attempted to encourage their young people or even gotten them involved in the competition. We say thank you. Again, the competition is open to junior and high school students across the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Okay, so lots to talk about. Nuri, I wanted to hit this measles story because we're a tourist nation.
Yes.
And we are constantly, I mean, every day we're welcoming thousands and thousands of people to our shores. We know that our health care and medical capacities are constrained.
Is the best in the Caribbean? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's constrained. Yeah. I mean, we could say best of in the Caribbean. We could say that. I don't have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
But we could also say, even though it's the best in the Caribbean, it's not the best that it could be in the Bahamas.
Okay.
Remember when I tell you my uncle, when I got an A for achievement and a C for effort?
Mm-hmm.
And he riled me for being proud of the A without acknowledging the C.
Mm-hmm.
For effort, right? And I think that's a great application right here.
Mm-hmm.
We could be best in the region. We still slunking.
Mm-hmm.
We're still not doing all that we ought to be doing. So in today's Nassau Guardian Health and Wellness section, Health Department urges measles vaccination. Officials embark on door-to-door program to promote awareness, education programs, and to immunize children who may have been missed. Measles is a highly contagious airborne viral disease that can lead to severe complications and death, but it is preventable with two doses of the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. With an outbreak of measles in countries in close proximity to the Bahamas, Bahamian health officials urge people to ensure that they and their children are protected. Protection against measles entails two shots of the vaccine given 4 weeks apart. One shot, officials said, is insufficient to guarantee protection. It's a very important story, important for parents. And listen, I'm not telling you have to get your children vaccinated, unless, of course, that's what the law says and it's mandatory. But what I am telling you is that you should be having conversations as parents and as families generally about vaccines and vaccinations, right? Because if you're not giving your child a vaccine, then you have to employ other methods and measures to keep them safe and to keep the people around them safe. That's just what it is. You have to do something. It's either A or B. Producer, let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. Ms. Green, morning to you, Mr. Nuri. Challenge Johnson.
Morning.
Yeah, just a couple of points. They're all interconnected,
mm-hmm.
right? But you're talking about vaccines right now,
mm-hmm.
and you're talking about children,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you've been talking about the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but they're all interconnected, right? We should know every person in the country, but more so we should know all of the, by international agreements and by law, we should know all of the individuals under the age of 16. That mm-hmm. means that interconnected from the hospital, so you talk about the nurses, is that we should also know their vaccine, their vaccination status or the health status of every single person.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about millions and millions of people. Now, all these are interconnected with the fact that we are yet to embrace the 21st century. And when you talk about that, it goes right to banking, where you're talking about banking on the Outer Islands, where we have the post office. I've been saying this for 20 years. We have the post office bank that only needs to be digitized, as well as the whole economy. If we move to digitization of the economy, we could get some things done. We've been talking about the sound dollar, and even the implementation, in my words, has been botched as to the potential of exactly what it could have been by virtue of trying to integrate it into something it was never meant to be. And so you go to the rideshare, where you have a pushback from a rideshare, where you're pushing back from the 21st century, because they all could coexist within each other. This is what free market does. The free market determines your existence.
Mm-hmm.
And so here they said, we want to go more and continue into these protectionist regime, and this is why the government itself has refused to fix the transportation business, because if the transportation business is actually fixed, which is possible on New Providence and most and Grand Bahama and other islands, you probably won't need taxis and ride services, because you'll have an efficient transportation system that works.
Mm-hmm. With options for people with mobility restrictions, with options for people who are shopping, who are carrying children, right?
Like food stores, everything.
Yeah.
You know, so what is happening is this, you know, it is a concept that says you cannot manage what you cannot measure, but you cannot measure what you refuse to acknowledge. And so, and we, everything that we have, and we hear, for instance, we hear about the nurses, we hear about the civil service, where you have probationary people, you have casual people, you have temporary people, you have 52-week program, you have permanent pensionable. And then you hear the government working on resolving these issues. You hear about people who hasn't been paid for years, and you hear about people who've been waiting for certification, classification, whatever you call it,
mm-hmm.
for years. And so that means that no matter what we think, we're not functioning in a 21st century environment. Because if you have technology and you can actually digitize and know where it is, and you know where technology notifies you of things that hasn't been done, that needs to be done, tables and environments that you can see the complete structure, the civil service, the way it should be. And, you know, if the ministers were serious, they would be able to tell us, this is the current civil service, and here's every position in the civil service and their responsibility and who they answer to, and here's the hierarchy of it, and here's what it is, here's what we pay them, everything else.
So, see, Alan, I want to move on, but I appreciate the point that you're making. If I could sum it up, what you're telling me is, if we would just invest in technology beyond the beige computers, right?
Yes, absolutely. But let me ask the two of you a question, right? I have one question for you and one question for Nuri. Okay. For you, Ms. Green.
Uh-huh.
I want to take a trip. I want to go from New Providence, and I want to make reservations with you. So I call you and says, hey, Ms. Green, I'm ready to take a trip for 1 week. When can I book? What is your question to me? I'm leaving New Providence.
And to a family island? Into
No, anywhere. Oh. The first question will be, is where do I want to go? And I say to you, I don't know. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first question. So if you want to take, if you know where you are, but don't know where you want to go, garbage. Okay, Nui, I call you and tell you I want to go to New York, and you say, where you want to leave from? And I say, I don't know. and this is the problem. We don't know where we are. We don't know where we want to go. And so the problem is that somehow we have an absence of leadership that actually could access where we are, where we need to go, and put in the infrastructure so we can have access to information and completely prepare for the 21st century. And this is ending. The reason why those people that can't get paid inside of the government, and the reason why housing cannot be afforded and all of these different things, because we cannot fix the economy, because you can't fix what you refuse to acknowledge that exists. And so we need leadership that has no fear of accepting where we are and collectively working with us to plot a path to where we want to be.
Man, listen,
and when we get that, we'll have a better Bahamas.
Before you use the word leadership, this conversation was good. Now I can charge you for a political ad. However,
I mentioned anybody, but if you believe there's somebody because here's the point.
Hold on.
If you did not and you ain't did it, you have to ask them. You have to begin to look for somebody who could.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, you ain't called no name, and what you're saying is correct, right? I believe, I agree with what you're saying. Let me rephrase that. I agree with what you're saying. But, you know, I just don't want people to think that we're running a whole political ad, because then I would have to ask you the question. Don't call back, but I'd have to ask you the question. Do you think the current leadership of the FNM actually maintain the space that you talk about? Do they understand? Do they see? Do they have a sense of self, a sense of place, a sense of time, and a sense of belonging? Do they understand that they need an economy, that they need a government that can move at the pace of its own policies, that can move at the pace of the economy that it's trying to create and maintain? Right? And then do they understand that you cannot run a country like an economy and disregard the citizens and their culture and the impact on the policies that you're trying to implement? So I'd have to ask all of those questions, and I don't necessarily want to ask all of those questions right now. But this is it. My fear is this. When I read the article, I was concerned about the approach that the state appears to be taking, right? I mean, at every level, this is necessary work. The Ministry of Health has an obligation to ensure that citizens understand their role in public health and safety, right? Did we understand what we ought to be doing as individuals, as families, and as parents? But I get the sense that we've given up on attempting to police our borders. We've given up on attempting to implement strategies that can capture people with measles, or also that we're not prepared to turn away people who do not present measles vaccination cards with them. We're not prepared to implement a new system that demands that you must have a vaccination card when you enter the country, and your entry will be denied if somehow you are able to leave your destination and get to the Bahamas without a vaccination card. I get the impression that we are not prepared to do that.
But let me interject there. Mm-hmm. And I ask, are we prepared to do that? Is knowing someone's health status upon entry of our borders is something that we want to get into? There are certain, like Ebola, I would like to know that, definitely, right? Especially if you're coming from a particular region, and normally in the African region, coming to the Western world, prone to that. But knowing someone's health status, is that something we want to get involved in?
I think, this is the thing. At a national security level, it's something we ought to be doing. But I think with tourism as our number one industry, right, that all of our policies have shifted away from that, have shifted away from any strategies, policies, or protocols that would prevent people from coming, right, that would disrupt the economic cycle, right?
And just for conversation, what would you, or what would we should be prepared to do? Just so I understand exactly what you're saying. Generally, like a recommendation to the government, are we prepared?
And let me tell you how I would start the recommendation. Whereas we have created a tourism development corporation, whereas said corporation has been granted its own consolidated fund, the Tourism Development Fund, separate from the consolidated fund, right? Whereas all of that has happened, whereas tourism is our number one industry to the point where we're ready to sacrifice some of our children to the tourism gods for a successful year, whereas we have no intention of moving away from tourism, I would invest heavily in a tourism subsector, right? I would incentivize one of our foreign direct investors to create a special unit attached to their hotel or in partnership with the government. So if you get to the Bahamas without your vaccination card, then you are then transferred to a quarantine unit where you get to spend your days quarantined on the beach, maybe in a lovely setting, Because you took the risk of coming here. See, you took the risk of coming without the necessary paperwork. You took that risk. The risk of a measles outbreak. See, a measles outbreak in the Bahamas will affect the citizens in an already overburdened health system that some state leaders have called apartheid-like. So we already know that. We already know that a measles outbreak in the Bahamas, especially if it's tourist-centered, like if they pinpoint that it started in a hotel or with a guest, that can disrupt the entire tourism industry for a length of time that may be detrimental to our recovery. So I would have long time have said to all the FDIs or to local investors, look here, here's what we need. Never stop inviting tourists in. Trust that. So we need a quarantine facility that accommodates guests who may get here without the proper paperwork or upon arrival are tested and found, right, with something contagious. And then you quarantine them until they could go home. And then they have to pay. And you work it out with the government because y'all let the people slip through your systems. And we didn't want to deny them their vacation. So we put them on a little holiday quarantine.
And I hear you on a couple of things you mentioned I embrace, mm-hmm. right? I will remove myself from the conversation of knowing a person's status before they come into the country mm-hmm. and quarantining and put the conversation to this. A guest is in the Bahamas,
mm-hmm.
child, mm-hmm. you know, family vacation, and whilst they're on vacation, it's suspected or the child has symptoms of having measles.
Yeah.
What is our current quarantine policy? Is there a current quarantine policy? And I see you hinted towards something that should happen. And I'm saying I do not know what is the policy. Now, let's say the child definitely has measles. Mm-hmm. We know it's contagious. It's in one of the major hotels, right? What should happen then? What should we be concerned about? What should the Department of Health Care or whatever it is?
Whoever's responsible.
Should be doing. Well, as soon as they find out, the phone call come, mind you, minister, we think we have a one person to have it, right? What happened there?
Well, if it's an airborne thing, then you have to identify everybody on the floor.
Everybody on the entire floor?
Well, how does your air system work, mm-hmm. right? I would definitely have the three people on one side, three people on the other side, on both sides, right, of the hallway quarantine. Everybody got to be quarantined. Everybody got to be locked down until we determine whether other people are going to develop the virus. And then people can say, well, if they're in the same air system, what if I didn't have the virus and you lock me down anyway, and then I get it, and now I have to quarantine longer. Well, this is balance of the rights of the individual versus the rights or the needs of the whole, right? That's important consideration. I don't know what the existing quarantine...
Is it something that we should ask about?
Yes, of course. In fact, we need to go to... You remember the Pandemic Act?
Mm-hmm.
We need to go into the Pandemic Act and determine the extent to which that act amended or repealed any provisions of prior acts and what it says now. If that only applies to when a state of emergency is called or there are provisions in there that speak to quarantine general reasons.
Okay, and then before we move on, I'll say this. Our method of combating this is you take your two MMR, mom's...
protect yourself.
Yeah, in the meantime. And once you have your shots, you're straight. That's our mechanism of fighting this. Yeah. And I said there's no... I was asking if there's some kind of procedure or what happens if someone comes with measles.
Well, what we do know, we had guests recently on air, what we do know is that the Ministry of Health has a quarantine station at the airport. That exists.
No, I'm saying bypass that. it's a hotel. They issue the person into the hotel. They come.
Yeah, yeah.
They show symptoms of having measles.
Yeah.
Like, what happens then?
We have to go beyond that. In fact, maybe we can get them back on to talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to say we know that we have protocols for situations like this. We know that there's a unit stationed at the airport, mm-hmm. right? So we know that these...
Someone talking about it.
No, not just someone talking about it, somebody doing it, right? Mm-hmm. These things are in operation.
Mm-hmm.
We're not that far in the bush.
Good.
But the question is, like for me, who's centered in the strategy and the solution, right? Are we centering the needs of tourists? Are mm-hmm. we centering the needs of business people and bottom lines? Mm-hmm. Or are we centering the needs of the citizen mm-hmm. in this country and in this economy? Mm-hmm. You know, and for me, it just suggests that some people are not governing a country which is comprised of people. And some people are not governing a nation that's comprised of laws and provisions, right? And treaties and contracts. Just governing an economy that they think is comprised of chattel. Mm-hmm. And that the citizens are merely capital in their economic pursuits and interests, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's a lack of protections. Speaking about protections, Mr. Newry, you ever seen an MP car with a siren?
Not an MP car. Perhaps the Prime Minister's car, the Governor General's car.
And maybe
Attorney General's car, maybe.
Maybe the DPM's vehicle, even though we know that it's just...
I would have been surprised if I see the DPM, but I would cast a blind eye to it, a blind. But definitely Attorney General's car. I might even go as far as the Minister of National Security, because mm-hmm. he might be on official business and need... Because all the police he has,
but not a cabinet minister's car.
Not a cabinet minister's car.
No, I'm saying not. I'm not referencing sirens in a cabinet minister's car, right? Because the AG's vehicle would be
as an AG.
No, but it's cabinet, right?
So, no, but the AG is a specific cabinet minister.
Right.
That's not.
But what I'm saying is on MP car, on the not the cars with the CM plate.
Oh, he's an
the
MP
car with the MP plate.
Definitely not. That could run anywhere. I've seen MP car with a plate. Driven by their children, who is not an MP, mm-hmm. the wife, who is not an MP, mm-hmm. right? I think that just allows them to get gas and thing. So I've seen not the MP drive the car. I've seen like
a family member.
Family member drive the MP car.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, a listener reached out to me and said that they observed an MP car with sirens, and they were wondering if there was any, if I knew or aware of any specific provision that enabled an MP, a car with an MP plate on it, to have a siren on it.
I have to see the video of that. That's one of those things you post and have commentary.
I don't know if you noticed my car. I finally have the brace for the camera. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start my show in a minute. Start recording what I see on the road. This morning on my way to work, Mr. Newry, as I was traveling south on Market Street, just after having exited Peck Slope, East Street Hill, and coming down onto Market Street from that access road, put on my right turn signal to get into the right lane, turned off my right turn signal, watched two cars run the stop sign as I was approaching the intersection, and then a third car pulled halfway out. They were attempting to run the stop sign as well. In their minds, I'm sure, in their mind, they weren't running the stop sign because that's what you do. You don't have to stop at stop signs. And after ensuring that I avoided a collision, I looked inside the vehicle, and I was so disappointed to see white uniform, police officer, right next to the school, right next to a financial district. That's what concerns me. I tell you what it is that concerns me. Mm-hmm. I see the culture clearly. I see what's happening, and for. A lot of it, I can understand why what I'm happening. Here's what I refuse to acknowledge as normal or just accept as it is what it is. Why is it that the most traffic infractions occur next to or in proximity to police stations, to courthouses, to hospitals, and to businesses that concern themselves with compliance? That whole East Street Hill stretch from East Street to the Government House is just a pile of madness. From the people who refuse to stop at the stop sign at Peck Slope and East Street Hill, it's just madness. And it's not who we would think are the usual suspects. These are wealthy people. These are well-to-do people. These are people with high-end job, high-tech job, good job. Multinational job. And what bothers me most is now the East Government House is open and functional. So at any point in time, a car could be leaving Government House. But those businesses right there, Mortgage Corporation, RF Trust, a couple other things, They concern themselves with compliance. And the people, they don't park according to the rules. They don't drive according to the rules. They refuse to stop at stop signs. They refuse to regard the right of way. And then I realized that's what it is right there. We don't respect the right of way. We don't respect your authority. We don't respect the right of way. We don't respect the rule of law. We don't understand what it means to follow the law, because that's what you're supposed to do. And in that space, right, because a lot of people, they say, well, I'm not hurting anybody, so what does it matter that I break this law? But you are hurting people. And you're causing accidents. And then for those people concerned about money, how do you think money works? You're disrupting the healthy flow of the economy by doing whatever on the road. Anyway, the point is, I have my camera now, Mr. Nuri, and I go make $1 million.
Yeah, I can see it.
With a TV show, documenting all the things we see on the road. Dear Bahamians, I know we're going to a break, producer. Dear Bahamians, you can't catch your attitude because somebody catch you doing foolishness, you know? You can't be prepared to beat somebody up because they acknowledge that you almost killed them. What are they supposed to do? Just not acknowledge it, let you go along your merry way, almost killing other people? That's what we're supposed to do?
Wait, you know what? Joe bring any knife to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Well, he fool with Joe girl.
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't bark down for nothing. So that means you got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you want?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not say about this fight.
Tell somebody. I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely got to tell somebody. We got to prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know. And nobody gotta know it's you.
So what out of the way?
All you gotta do is call them or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami and they don't ask nothing about you. Then you can get the pin from them and they can claim a reward later using that same pin.
Plus, everything's scrambled so nobody can read what you're saying.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Pin has a new line. The Sky series of porcelain. It comes in four colors. Sky Noir, Sky Gris, Sky Glance, and this one, Sky Azure. As the name suggests, you would think it has a strong blue component, but the blue is kind of like just like the overall coloring of the porcelain. The blue feature runs more or less the center of the tile, not surrounded by light shades of gray. The Sky Azure, like the others in the series, needs to be seen to be appreciated. Stop by Pinder Tile and have a look at Sky Azure, one of the four in the Sky series.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
At Cleveland Clinic, care is everything. So when your primary purpose is to care for the world, you'd start with your community. Until you're accessible anywhere. You make complexities specialties and put compassion before anything else. All to redefine what's possible for everyone, everywhere, for every care in the world. Cleveland Clinic.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Aaron Green. Let's get back into the conversation. I think where we left it, do MP cars have sirens? And why you always commit the most infractions like right next to the police station? Right? Or in the alternate, why y'all just don't take the stop sign down by Meaden Street and Nassau Street? Down. Right? What do y'all think y'all doing to your children when they're in the car with you and stop sign after stop sign you approach and you refuse to stop at it? What you think you're doing to your children? Mr. Newry, did you know there's a stop sign at the top of Carter Street where it meets Farrington Road? Mm-hmm. I am surprised by how many people just refuse to acknowledge that there must be a stop sign there. The extent to which Bahamians will stretch their minds to fit whatever they're feeling into reality is very concerning. So let's transition to this next story. Taxi drivers under siege, asserts union president. This was in yesterday's paper, Nassau Tribune. The Bahamas Taxi Cab Union's president is asserting that his members and the wider industry are, quote, under siege by individuals operating illegal rideshare services.
Just stop right there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say that one more time, because I believe the Bahamian public needs to understand what the union, the taxi union, is saying about us. Because even though they're talking about rideshare people, they're talking to the Bahamian people. I think it's a very accusatory in general, and I want us to understand what they're saying about the Bahamian people.
All right, let me reread the sentence. The Bahamas Taxi Cab Union's president is asserting that his members in the wider industry are, quote, under siege, close quotes, by individuals operating illegal rideshare services.
And the reason why I have a problem with that is rideshare services exist because of the taxi drivers not servicing the Bahamian people properly, full stop.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is true, then his statement is an attack against us. Because I don't necessarily want to go to a rideshare. I would love to go use a taxi. But taxis are unavailable. If he is now holding us hostage saying, we don't care about dropping you home. And we don't want no one else drop you home either.
Mm-hmm.
That's problematic.
Then here's my next thing. What do you mean by under siege?
And what do you mean by under siege?
I mean, like, are the illegal ride shares taking all the tourists?
They ain't taking no tourists.
Because here's the thing. Oh, caller is coming to you in 3 seconds. I saw he called back. The number's to call 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720. Producer, let's prep that caller. Are illegal ride shares taking all the tourist customers? And if they are, then is that not the market telling you something needs to shift?
Something needs to shift.
Let's go to the phone line quickly.
And let me ask you this so we get the call up.
Yeah.
If I own an Airbnb, me, C.A. Nuri owns an Airbnb at my house, and a guest comes in and says, hey, when you drop me to your house, can you come pick me up? Is that ride share? I said, no problem. I'll pick you up and drop you to where the house would be so you could know where.
I pick you up from the airport
to the
and
airport,
drop you to the house.
And drop you to the house. Is that ride share? Are they complaining about that, me picking up my guests?
That's another, like, do you require a license to be able to do that complimentary with your Airbnb approvals? Good morning, caller.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. How you do?
Great, great. I just want to say off the bat, thank you all so much for doing a fantastic job keeping the Bahamian populace informed.
Thank you.
Now, I'm a public service driver.
Yes, ma'am.
I've been driving for 17 years, and I've put my children through school and college. Now, to be a driver and to take passengers,
mm-hmm.
for starters, you have to be insured for liability,
mm-hmm.
number one. So if you own an Airbnb and you say, yeah, I could give you a ride, long as the guest is not paying you for that ride,
mm-hmm.
then it's a ride.
Okay.
If you're being paid, then you need to be regulated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as it relates to taking the Bahamian customers, you know, as drivers, especially a female, you know, we've been put in some precarious positions. And so a lot of taxi drivers are a little apprehensive to take over-the-hill passengers. Now, I have no problem with over-the-hill passengers being serviced.
Mm-hmm.
But these drivers with the blue plates are tapping into the tourist markets, and they're not properly regulated.
Now, may I ask how?
Problem.
How? Give me an example. Of what they do.
For starters, they don't have the proper insurance.
No. Not by how to do it. I mean, how do they tap into it?
Oh, okay. So if I own an Airbnb and my cousin need a job or something, or he ain't working, okay, I can pay you to carry them. Okay, I know a lady who have tours and transportation on her blue van.
Mm-hmm.
I know road traffic to see her dropping off at the airport in a blue plate. mm-hmm. and at the hotel picking up toys. You're in a blue plate. That's illegal.
I
don't have no problem with you carrying the station. They need to get home too. And we need to be better towards one another. If you wasn't robbing us and killing us, we wouldn't have been scared.
So I appreciate that. With the thing you said at the end there, right? I appreciate that. 30 years ago, I was trying to get a ride from Atlantis home after an event. And a senior man taxi driver tell me, miss, I wouldn't even drop you at the foot of Johnson Road at the Eastern Road.
Mm. No, well, I don't agree with him because I've driven, let me intersect that. I've driven behemoths who work at the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's probably not familiar with you, you know, but if you're coming from out of a function, and I know you're coming from out of a function, my God, you could use your discretion, especially if it's Aaron Green. I mean, everybody know Aaron can set you up.
I wasn't Aaron at that point in time. I was just
okay.
One. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? That by then, I know,
yeah.
But somebody recognized my face and my people and then said, I know who that is, and I can take them home, right? And so another taxi driver accommodated. But the concern, safety concern is what I'm saying, is extremely important. And I know that the infrastructure, the taxi drivers and other public service drivers like jitneys should be able to rely on in the evening, in the nighttime, for their safety does not exist. It just don't exist.
Yeah.
Now,
that's the concern.
It's not to say that police officers are not answering calls. But there's no system in place to ensure that on the route that there are officers patrolling and observing. Because like you say, all it takes is for me to observe a vehicle with a blue plate more than once, dropping somebody off for me to begin investigating what is happening here. And so we all take that part seriously when taxi drivers say safety, risk of robbery and death. I put the pressure on the state and the constituency team to build out infrastructure that supports the people in their constituencies.
Ma'am, I appreciate you calling, and I will continue this conversation so to allow you to call back and get
on. Listening. If I have any more input, I'll call back, ma'am.
Yes.
I really appreciate you very much.
Because I want to get more examples. You gave one specific example, and I would want to have you go in detail, but the line's full. So that's why I said I'm going to extend the conversation again. So you can call back, and I want to hear examples. You gave examples about the tour. I didn't see that in my mind. And I want you to give specific examples on how these blue plate,
cowboys. Blue plate cowboys.
If I work at the hotel, I call my boy.
I can let you talk about it. I just have the phone's lying full. Yeah. Right? I want you to call back.
Right.
Continue listening.
Thank you.
Let's go to the next caller, producer. Good morning, caller.
Hey, Aaron. Good morning, CA.
Morning.
You know, I just want that lady to listen to what I have to say in reference to these taxi drivers, because there's a void of public transportation for Bahamians.
Mm-hmm.
And I made that recommendation on Facebook years ago. I talked about perhaps, you know, someone needs to look at doing an Uber service, you know, because it's very important. It's obvious the taxi drivers, for whatever reason, they prefer the U.S. dollar over the Bahamian dollar. And it's all because of greed. You know, it don't have nothing to do with nothing else.
Greed is a harsh word. But go ahead. But go ahead. I see your point. But go ahead.
I'll tell you. You see, because when I used to work over on Paradise Island, I used to have problems as a male getting a ride, calling a cab, and them coming to take me out east. It used to be a problem, especially on the hotel line door, and they're saying that they are soon to be out. You couldn't get none. You have to literally beg them. And then when you do, they overprice you. But taxi drivers, some of them, they can't talk about what people need to do. That is not their call to be saying people need insurance. Or that is not their business. You see, many taxi drivers, Aaron, if you go downtown right now, these cab drivers who are doing the tours, they start cafe. And I have to compete with taxi drivers because they have gin and coconut water in their bus. Mm. They have bears in their bus.
I've seen that.
So two things. Two separate issues. I hear what you're saying. Like
you may have to call back too. Just
because
like the next taxi lady.
There are reasons. I mean, it's in law that to provide a service.
They're charging.
No, but hold on. It's two separate things. The first point you made when you said that who are they to be saying that people need insurance? The law says that the people need insurance. That's a separate matter. Now to your second point about taxi drivers providing services outside of the scope of their licensing. See, that's what we're talking about, because you need a liquor license to sell liquor.
Exactly my point. But they say that they are doing it complimentary. But even if they're doing it complimentary, Aaron, they're in the business to provide transportation. You have persons who have a license to provide the food, the drinks, the breeders, same thing. They do breeding. It's all a collaborative effort. But you cannot be zigzagging, crisscrossing, depending on how much money you want to make in a particular day and hurting other people's businesses.
Right.
These Uber drivers isn't hurting the taxi industry.
Sir,
I call 35111 or 34555.
I want you to continue listening, because I want to continue this conversation. I want to hear more of these examples too.
And the conversation isn't, let's prep the next caller producer. The conversation isn't just about the taxi drivers versus the ride share drivers. Because that's just centering money. That's all that you're doing is centering their capacity to make money. What about the passengers? What about the customers? When are we going to center the Bahamian people in the conversation outside of the business person? Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Ms. Green. Good morning, Mr. Newry.
Morning.
You know, I could share some of the concerns of the lady in the taxi as far as safety, but I fear for the safety of people, right? I didn't go back to the university because they told me I had to get an MMR vaccine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination attenuated vaccine. It's very safe. You know, we have all been experimenting on it early when we took it. But the question is, when you're administering vaccines and you don't have an adverse event reporting system, then it really was, because I paid attention to it because Japan from 1993 had suspended its MMR vaccine. So what they did was, because of concern and something that raised, when a professor was on the radio the other day, and I was saying that because they administered the three vaccines all in one. So what Japan did, because of concerns, and they had adverse events of aseptic meningitis,
mm-hmm.
which is simply in the meninges, right, the spelling, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to move the mumps component of the vaccine and separated them. So, but because we have people like the Kennedy guy and other people who was voicing these concerns, then you have, you're not getting real science. Science is very complicated. You're not getting the hubris medical community. Some of them will admit the things, but let's take, for instance, COVID. We injected people. We didn't have any adverse events. Now, why is the death from MMR vaccines pretty rare? There are instances in which children, because of their immune system being compromised, have died from the vaccine. And so Japan had that particular problem. So what I'm saying is, Aaron, just use common sense here. To hell with the science. If you're administering the children are now getting like 14 vaccines for 14 diseases. So if you are administering them too quickly and you are co-joining them together, then for me, with common sense, it's hard for me to find out what really is the problem in an adverse event. Which one is the culprit? You get what I'm saying, Ms. Green?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we don't need them to tell us what they're doing to us. So they want us to get comfortable and they'll vaccinate us right back in there, because it's called scientific dictatorship and tyranny. And so you need to have sensible conversations and dialogue with pundits and non-pundits, and just use Google as a reference point instead of dismissing things what people say. Because you be in the school and you think that you know it all, when common sense can be juxtaposed to basically anything, Ms. Green. I'm not talking BS. Give thanks.
Good morning.
There you go.
Yeah, I appreciate the point that a lot of people's concerns are less with the vaccine and more with the lack of complementary services or entities or institutions or mechanisms that should sit with it. And so we're giving vaccines. Do you have an adverse incident center where you're doing real investigations so that people will know what happened to them and why in the event of an adverse effect, right, in a vaccination? I can appreciate that point. Don't just say you can give us vaccines. Let me know that you have a vaccine regime that also includes all of the units and mechanisms attached for the protection of the citizen and then the wider public health and safety issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mr. Newry, can we continue?
Of course we can continue.
Article?
I mean, the type of texts we've got gotten regarding this ride share and taxi. I want to give the callers who called during your show an opportunity to call back and give specific examples.
Mm-hmm.
One of the concerns I have is not having a debate or discussion on how to employ or empower Bahamians to join into this industry, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that if there are issues, we need to expose what the issues are. So if there's opportunity in the future for these people, we know where, how and what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm going to do for the next hour.
Absolutely. For me, it's not a matter of shutting down or shutting out the rideshare space. It's a matter of not implementing it until we're sure that it will be properly regulated.
Mm-hmm.
Not for the concerns of this sector or that sector, but for the safety of the people who would be using the service.
Yes.
Right? That's my primary concern. Yes.
And that seemed to be easy to do. Just regulate it.
I mean, it seems to be easy to do, but even when we ensured, even when we expand the system and ensure that the requisite legislation is in place, the mechanisms, the licensing, what about the oversight and the enforcement?
And that's for everything.
We're just creating another sector that's running amok.
Yeah, like the hospital and governance and the school. But can't close them down. You're just working, trying to improve them.
Yeah, but why create a new sector understanding the difficulties policing those that exist already, when what you could do is expand on existing sectors and still create a safe environment?
We can talk about that.
Okay, then.
We can talk about that.
You've been on the clock with Aaron Green. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Newry is up next. And just in case you did forget, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720 for our Family Island listeners. My people in Michal, what's going on? The people in Abaco, the fire is still burning. These are questions we have in Nassau. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.